Good morning. I'm calling to order this meeting of the House Workforce, Labor, and Economic Finance and Policy Committee, Economic Development, Finance, and Policy Committee. I'm Representative Dave Pinto, along with Representative Dave Baker, the co-chairs of the committee. Members, we have a one bill up today, and there are a lot of testifiers. I'm going to say right at the start that I'm going to have to be very strict with testifiers regarding time limits. For most of you, that we've told you a two-minute time limit. There's a couple folks have a couple minutes longer than that, but I'm going to have to be pretty aggressive to make sure that folks stick within that time. So you have to think about fitting yourselves in that time. Please, please let me know. Representative Schultz, you're giving me a look like you had something you want to say or ask. Representative Schultz?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It is really about process. With 24 people planning to speak, are we planning to, what are you expecting for today's hearing in regards to following the testimony from the public?
Yeah, Representative Schultz, part of the reason I want to be strict with the testimony is to make sure that we do have plenty of time to discuss. I'm not expecting to have the testifiers fill up the full hour and 45 at all. I think we built in at least a half an hour, if not more, of discussion and questions. And the plan is to lay the bill over as well, so there will not be a vote on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My only other question for you would be, are the testifiers going to remain in the room for questions today, Mr. Chair?
I certainly would encourage them to do so. Ask to the extent testifiers can stay. We certainly would want you to. I understand maybe not every single person can. We certainly would want folks to do so. Thank you, Representative Schultz. Quickly, though, we want to address our minutes. I'll ask Chair Baker if he's willing to move approval of minutes from the – if we have Mr. Chair.
March 26th. Yes, Mr. Chairman. So move the minutes as presented for approval.
Thank you. Any discussion, additions, corrections, members? Not seeing any. All in favor of approval of the March 26th minutes, please say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Okay, motion passes. Minutes are approved. Chair Frazier and Chair Zhang are in front of us, and Chair Frazier, I believe the bill is now, you're now the author of the bill, and so you move House File 4477 to bring that before us, yes?
That's right, Mr. Chair.
Okay, and then you've got the DE2 amendment, and members, I'm inclined to just vote to approve this, and then Chair Frazier and Chair Zhang can talk about it. You want us to adopt the DE2 amendment, Chair Frazier?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay. And so, Representative Schultz, yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My understanding is this DE, it has no money specifically inside of it. And I'm just curious if we're going to discuss a bill today regarding a blank check for Minnesota taxpayers with regards to the consequences for noncompliance with federal law.
Well, Representative Schultz, I guess maybe what I'll say for now is...
Chair, could I respond to that?
Certainly, certainly, Chair Frazier.
Representative Schultz, I reject that premise that these individuals did not comply with federal law. We're talking about individuals that were terrified to leave their homes, terrified to come to their place of business that they own, that has been productive in a community, creating economic development and jobs. I reject that premise.
I guess if it's okay, let's maybe save Representative Schultz the rest of your question for the discussion, if that's all right. I mean, it's
yes,
pretty
Mr.
common.
Chair, I just want to point out on the DE2 that on line 3.2 that there is a blank appropriation from the general fund for this conversation this morning. So as we're grounding ourselves and talking about what happened over the last 4 to 6 months or longer, Mr. Chair, this bill doesn't have specific dollar amounts included in it, and I'm concerned with that, Mr. Chair.
Appreciate you you reading the bill. That's a good thing to do. Given that, if we can, there's a motion to adopt the DE2 amendment. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. The DE2 is adopted. Chair Frazier, Chair Zhang, to your amended bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll start, and then Chair Zhang will have some words to add as well. And just to the DE, what it does is it combines a proposal that I carried, and then Chair Zhang carried a proposal as well. It reflects the important feedback from small business owners and community organizations who are living with what happened every single day now. Folks on the ground who helped us tighten the language and make sure that this bill actually meets this moment. We can have further conversation about the amount. That is the normal process within this committee and every committee within this legislature. Very odd to have a comment that seems to not understand that. I want to thank Chair Zhang for his partnership on this. This is what it looks like when we come together around a real problem and focus on solutions that matter for Minnesotans. Members, we are here because the economic harm we're seeing is not isolated. It is statewide. From the metro to the suburbs to greater Minnesota, small businesses have taken a hit. We're talking about places like Wilmer, Rochester, Mankato, St. Cloud, Worthington, Northfield, Duluth, Chanhassen, Shakopee, and many more. Different communities may have experienced the increased federal presence in different ways, but the economic consequences have shown up everywhere. Main Street is hurting across Minnesota. Initial research from Greater MSP and the Minnesota CDFI Coalition estimates that small businesses lost hundreds of millions of dollars in just a few short months from December 2025 through February 2026. And when you talk to business owners in our districts, you hear the same story. Sales dropping off sharply, foot traffic disappearing. I firsthand witnessed that in the businesses in my community, driving by every single day during the occupation, seeing that the parking lots were empty in the morning for breakfast time and then also in the evening for dinner time. Workforce shortages making it harder to keep doors open. Shopping centers that feel like ghost towns. These are not isolated antidotes. This is a pattern, and months of sustained losses are pushing businesses to the brink. For many, especially immigrant-owned businesses, this isn't about bad decisions or poor management. It's about circumstances entirely outside of their control. Now, I also want to acknowledge something that sits at the heart of this issue. The fear in our workforce is real, and it's understandable. We saw Minnesotans being stopped, questioned, and detained because of how they looked or how they sound. That includes individuals with valid work permits, green card holders, and even American citizens. People were being detained and transferred out of state without access to legal counsel. Think about that. Think about what that does to the workforce. Think about the impossible choices families had to make, whether to go to work, whether to send their kids to school, whether to even leave their homes. That fear doesn't stay contained. It ripples outward. It impacts workers, families, and ultimately the small businesses that depend on them. So when we talk about economic recovery, we have to be honest about what caused the harm, and we have to be serious about responding to it. This bill is about stabilizing small businesses, supporting our workforce, and recognizing that when one part of our economy is disrupted, it affects the entire state. Mr. Chair, I'll turn it over to Chair Jeong, and then we will allow for testifiers to come in.
Thank you, Chair Jeong.
Good morning, and thank you, Chair Pinto. I just want to take the opportunity to also thank Chair Baker for your collaboration with me within the last few weeks here, alongside Chair Frazier and our friends in the Senate, Chair Bobby Joe Champion, for the continuing conversations. And also want to thank the stakeholders, community leaders, and small business owners who have worked with us throughout the year. I'm proud to co-present House File 4477 alongside Chair Frazier here. What we're doing today is trying to build a stronger framework shaped by input on the ground. And I know it's a work in progress. Representative Schultz, you're asking about the blank appropriation. I just want to note that this is intentional, that the bill is being laid over for negotiation, and we've had this conversation with Chair Baker about the numbers. And so it's a work in progress, and it's time is running out here. And so from December through February, businesses across Minnesota saw massive losses, workforce disruptions, and in many cases, were forced to close temporarily through no fault of their own. These are Minnesotan businesses, registered, tax-paying, employing our constituents, and this bill is about stabilizing them and preventing permanent economic damage. We've built in accountability through eligibility requirements, trusted partners, and fraud enforcement provisions. This is targeted relief, not a blank check. Members, today is about building a framework and hearing from those most impacted, and I look forward to hearing from all of you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much. So we're going to start with Aaron Rosenthal. I'll ask testifiers to keep an eye on the names in front of you, and as your name approaches, move towards the front of the room, and then when a spot opens up at that front table, when you're ready, then move on up, and we'll keep things moving. So we're starting with Aaron Rosenthal. If you please identify yourself and proceed. And again, I think we've just given you 2 minutes, and I'm so sorry for that. Mr. Rosenthal.
Thank you, Chair Pinto, members of the committee. I'm Aaron Rosenthal, and I'm the research director for North Star Policy Action. We're a think tank dedicated to improving the lives of working Minnesotans. Since January, we've released 4 reports on the economic impact of Operation Metro Surge. These reports point to a clear, consistent conclusion. Over the last several months, fewer Minnesotans have gone to work, and those that did work shorter hours, with the result being deep wage losses. Our most recent analysis suggests Operation Metro Surge was deeply implicated in the state's increased unemployment rate in January 2026. We found that the sectors hit hardest were the ones most exposed to DHS harassment. For example, accommodation and food services lost 3,300 jobs in January alone. That represents the industry's largest non-pandemic drop on record in Deeds data, which goes back to 2007. But unemployment tells only part of the story. Many workers did not lose their jobs. They kept them, but were too afraid to show up. That harm shows up in another striking statistic. On average, Minnesotans worked fewer hours in January 2026 than any other month recorded in Deeds data. In the Twin Cities, we estimate that hours worked fell by roughly 2% between early January and mid-February. That may sound small, but even that decline translates into at least $106 million in lost wages. And that $106 million excludes losses experienced in the rest of the state, lost business revenue, and many other aspects of the economic damage done. Put simply, our estimates provide a very conservative floor, and we hope you will take that into account as you consider how to ensure that the relief offered is commensurate to the harm done. The human cost of Operation Metro Surge has been made frighteningly clear through lost lives, destroyed families, and traumatized children. What our analysis shows is that the economic cost is just as real and just as urgent to address. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you for landing on 2 minutes, just almost perfectly. I do want to direct members your attention to the document from North Star Policy Action, which contains a lot of useful information in our packets and posted online. So as we shift to the next speakers on Zoom, I'll ask Mayor Herr and CEO Baker to make your way to the testifier table. Mayor Frey, I think, will be joining us a little bit later. And so to our testifier on Zoom, the Mayor Crystal, if you can identify yourself and proceed with your testimony. And I believe we have 3 minutes for you.
Good morning, Chair Pinto, members of the committee. My name is Julie Deschler. I'm the mayor of Crystal, and I'm here today representing Cities for Safe and Stable Communities. We're a nonpartisan coalition of 33 Minnesota cities united to restore economic stability and public trust. I am here in support of HF 4477. Total economic damage from Operation Metro Surge is still surfacing across our coalition. Preliminary data shows an estimated 150,000 immigrants and foreign-born community members were directly affected. Coalition cities alone have incurred over 400,000 in direct costs, and from police overtime, staff responses, and communications. Our cities have allocated $1.4 million in emergency grant support, with an additional $180,000 requested and still pending. Hundreds of local businesses within our cities reported monthly losses of 50 to 100% during Operation Metro Surge. Within our coalition, our small business owners have told us that this has been worse than COVID. Our restaurants, markets, and salons saw foot traffic vanish. This resulted in business closures, staffing shortages, revenue drops, and thousands of dollars in expired or unused products. Additional safety measures have had to be implemented to ensure staff feel safe, secure at work for many businesses as well. Small business owners have maxed up credit cards trying to hold on. Some owners cannot pay their commercial mortgages when tenants cannot pay the rent, and landlords will be affected too. Our coalition is here today with a clear request. Acknowledge the economic harm done to our cities and support 2026 relief funds for small business owners. Our cities did not create these conditions, but we are responsible for the aftermath. We ask you for your partnership in stabilizing our local economies. Our communities deserve stability. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you for being here. Thanks for your testimony. So move to Mayor Herr, and I think you have a full 4 minutes, Mayor, and it's so good to have you back in the House.
Thank you, Chair Pinto, and thank you to all the members. And I want to say a special thank you to Chair Frazier and Chair Zhang for the opportunity to speak on this bill. I will say that I'm going to be talking just about the economic impact today, but I want to be very clear that Operation Metro Surge had a far greater impact than that. The millions of dollars of police overtime, the cost to our education system moving in my district 8,000 kids to remote learning, the cost to health care of people who were afraid to leave. My own parents wouldn't leave their homes to address their physical health and the issues that chronic health issues that they experience. And so, like, in a place of where I have as much privilege as much official power as I do, and that my own family was afraid to go to the doctor, and they had moved these appointments to remote, or that they didn't go at all, that there has been a huge cost beyond the economic cost. But today, I will just be speaking to the economic cost. I think that we are all very much aware that small businesses are the backbone of St. Paul's economy, and what we are seeing in the wake of Operation Metro Surge is a catastrophic collapse in our local economy. I'm speaking to you today in hopes of gaining your support to keep businesses open, people employed, and neighborhoods stable. In St. Paul, we estimate small businesses lost approximately $16 million per week, about $64 million per month, $129 million over January and February, the height of the federal occupation. Businesses reported a 50% drop in foot traffic and 40% decline in sales, with the greatest impact in restaurants, retail, personal services, and neighborhood grocery stores that are frequented by our refugee and immigrant communities. I did the work that we possibly could in gathering small businesses together to understand, and these numbers, as the previous testifier stated, are conservative estimates, because when I talked to small businesses personally, they were telling me businesses was down 60 to 70% during these months. And so these are very conservative estimates. We also have employed the help of the University of San Diego to do more official surveying and researching, and so we will be bringing those to the legislature when we have that concrete data. But just know that these are very conservative estimates of the surveys that we have done through our Planning and Economic Development Department. This is not a typical downturn. Businesses are open, but customers stayed home, workers could not show up as usual, and cornerstone events were canceled. This is a government-driven disruption, not a failure of businesses themselves. Businesses didn't make bad decisions. Their entire customer base was upended, and the environment changed. The impacts are still falling hardest on neighborhood-based and immigrant-owned businesses, many of which operate on very thin margins. These businesses anchor our neighborhoods and commercial corridors. When they struggle, entire communities feel it. This disruption has impacted the entire state and exceeds the capacity of any one city to address alone. City resources are limited and not designed for rapid, large-scale economic shocks like this. It is imperative for the financial health of the state that we act quickly to prevent businesses from closing. Keeping doors open means preventing permanent closures and maintaining jobs. Many places of business in our community are still closed after operations, with a slow trickle of news and rumor about more and more of them never opening again. To stabilize our economy, I am here to advocate for the following measures. First, prioritize grants to businesses that can stabilize without taking on more debt. Second, ensure flexibility to funds so funds can be used for rent, payroll, and day-to-day operations. Each business is different, and we will need that flexibility to make this work. Third, keep access simple with streamlined applications and broad eligibility. And fourth, move resources quickly through local governments and trusted partners like foundations. This is a targeted, fiscally responsible response focused on short-term stabilization during an active disruption. In closing, this is a short-term shock with a potential for long-term damage. The faster we stabilize small businesses, the faster we stabilize our communities. And I think that many of you who have represented businesses and who do run cities, you do know that it's very quickly a business can close, but it takes us years to reopen them, and that is long-term economic impact. So thank you so much.
Mayor Hurd, thank you so much for being here, and thank you for your leadership and what I know, extremely difficult time. Mayor Fry, we'll have you come up now to testify that you've arrived. And I'll apologize, Mayor, in advance that we'll have to keep you just to 4 minutes, which I know is hardly adequate under the circumstances, but we get a lot of testifiers. Mayor, if you can identify yourself, and then please proceed. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much, Co-Chair Pinto. And Co-Chair Baker, members of this committee, my name is Jacob Fry. I'm the mayor of Minneapolis. I also want to thank Chair Frazier and Chair Zhang for their work carrying this bill. We're indeed grateful. As you know, The city of Minneapolis has been through quite a bit over these last several months. I won't give you a subjective take on what we've experienced. I'll give you a quantitative one. We've experienced over $205 million of impact in our city, $47 million worth of lost wages, $81 million worth of impact to small and local businesses. We've had tens of million dollars in impact in terms of inability to pay rent, tens of millions of dollars worth of impact to mental health for kids, tens of millions of dollars worth of impact on hotel losses, both present and future. The impact is staggering. We at the city are going to do what we can to step up, and that is to the tune of approximately $7 million. Those $7 million can assist businesses in paying for their license fees and permits, giving them a break so that they're able to stay open. The $7 million can assist with programming and events to drive as much customer traffic to these corridors that were badly hurt during Operation Metro Surge. This is not something that the city anticipated. We were already experiencing difficult fiscal times. This was a full-on invasion by the federal government of an unconstitutional nature. And the impact to the businesses throughout our city, it is staggering. This is not a partisan issue. Democrats, Republicans, independents in Minneapolis feel the same way. This is not ideological. People were afraid to leave their homes, could not go into work. They were terrified to bring their kids even into daycare and therefore were holed up in their homes, scared to leave. So that's the end impact. Again, we're looking at between $10 and $20 million of economic impact to small businesses every single week of Operation Metro Surge, culminating in $205 million in total. That's the kind of impact we're seeing. It's staggering, and I appreciate your hearing me here today. I appreciate the authors of this bill for their courage and for your work, and I'm happy to stand for questions.
Thank you so much, Mayor. I mean, please do stick around if you can. Thank you. So CEO Baker, we'll have you come up, and then Joanne Stately, Scott Marquardt, if you can be ready to go. And again, as other folks, as your name is coming up in the list, if you can make sure to be towards the front so we can get you in that seat right away. And so welcome to you. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony. And my apologies to, and I think all the remaining testifiers, actually, I guess the next couple are 3 minutes because of the overseeing the aspects of the bill. So welcome and please proceed.
Yeah, thank you. I'll be brief. Thank you, Chair. My name is Shonda Smith Baker. I serve as the president and CEO at the St. Paul and Minnesota Foundation. The St. Paul and Minnesota Foundation partners with thousands of donors, nonprofit organizations, and community members to help meet our aspiration, an equitable, just, and vibrant Minnesota where all people can thrive. While most of our work is statewide and beyond, we have a robust grant-making program focused on the Twin Cities Metro, East Metro, including Ramsey, Washington, and Dakota counties. Regarding economic security, the foundation recognizes the importance of anchor institutions embedded at the neighborhood level. Our approach to community-informed strategy was essential in assessing economic disruption caused by the largest immigration enforcement operation ever carried out in Minnesota. According to an email we received from the Minnesota Hmong Chamber of Commerce, they conducted a rapid field assessment indicating that business activity dropped to 10% of normal levels. At Hmong Town, which typically generates 3 million in monthly activity, roughly 110 vendors were losing an average of $1,000 daily, resulting in an estimated monthly losses of up to 2.9 million. These figures exclude unrecoverable costs like spoiled inventory and disrupted supply chains. Immediate investments are necessary to prevent permanent closures and stabilize this vital segment of the economy. This is why we urge you to pass House File 4477. We're committed and capable of working alongside you to address the economic instability impacting our communities. Thank you so much.
And thank you so much for your work. Thank you for being here. Joanne Stately, you're up next, and then Scott Marquardt. And please identify yourself and proceed.
Chair Pinto and Chair Baker, members of the committee, I'm Joanne Stately. I'm honored to be here today. I appeared before this committee probably about 4 or 5 weeks ago. I can't remember, but it was very early in the session. So I appreciate this opportunity to come again before your committee and also here to endorse House File 4477. This legislation builds on the rapid response efforts that we've seen across the state that represent the contributions of individuals, foundations, private businesses, and other local units of government. This was indeed a very necessary part of what rapid response looked like. But today I'm here to endorse this bill because this is the next step of looking at how we can help to stabilize these businesses. You have a handout that gives an overview of our economic response recovery fund that we testified before to give you an indication of what we were doing as the Minneapolis Foundation. And this was a very quick effort that was based on contributions that came from our business community, and approximately $4 million was initially raised. And we worked with intermediaries that represent our very well-known CDFIs here in the metropolitan area and also across the state. This was a statewide program. We had an application that was open for approximately 3 weeks, and we received 2,500 applications. We have never received a grant round at the Minneapolis Foundation that had that many applicants. We were very pleased at the response. We were also very pleased at how the demonstration of over 55 counties were represented and 156 businesses from across the state were part of that as well. Our cities, not businesses, 156 cities representing those counties. And again, this was something that we usually don't do as a Minneapolis Foundation. Most of our stuff is pretty much concentrated in the West Metro. So this was very successful from the standpoint of being able to work with our partners that are very familiar with working with small businesses and supporting and providing technical assistance to them as part of their regular work, and also very successful with our application to make it very easy and accessible for a number of small businesses to apply. Unfortunately, the issue is that we had $4 million to grant. And our, you know, the grants are going to range between $2,500 and $10,000, which is somewhat similar to what is in this bill. I'm here today to encourage the consideration of $100 million to be part of this legislation as it moves forward. Based on kind of what we've seen in our experience and the types and levels of grants, to get to that point of stabilization is very critical and important. Much like Shonda's testimony and representing the St. Paul Minnesota Community Foundation, the Minneapolis Foundation would be honored to be part of helping to implement this legislation. And I want to thank, again, the committee to be able to testify before you today, and both to Representative Fraser and Representative Zhang in helping to sponsor this bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Scott Marquardt, you're up next, and then we'll have Carl Swanson. And I appreciate folks are being very good about sticking to the time limits and appreciate it. I believe, Mr. Marquardt, I think you have 3 minutes as well.
Thank you, Co-Chair Pinto and Co-Chair Baker. My name is Scott Marquardt. I'm president of Southwest Initiative Foundation. We serve the 18 counties and two Native nations of rural Southwest Minnesota, including the great communities of Worthington, Wilmer, Glencoe, and others impacted by recent immigration enforcement. As an economic development organization, I'm hearing from numerous businesses in our region that have been impacted financially by the immigration enforcement activities, with major losses of revenue and working capital throughout many sectors, retail, service, hospitality, agriculture, many of these being critical community need businesses. From our perspective, this truly is a business retention, job retention, and ownership succession issue, which is why I'm grateful that this committee is hearing this bill in addition to the counterparts in the Senate. We believe that there is a real risk to tax base and community vitality and workforce retention throughout our region. why we particularly support this bill urgently and unequivocally is it leverages the successes and lessons learned from, we believe, the rigor of the small business emergency loans and small business loan guarantees, which organizations like us have deployed over the past few years. In partnership with DEED during the pandemic, those programs had excellent rigor, diligence, accountability, balancing access to capital with what the regions need at the time, fully understand and acknowledge the conversations that the legislature is having right now regarding fraud and ways to improve programs. But I can say I personally put my signature and my reputation on every one of our small business emergency loans and small business loan guarantee approvals because we believed in the rigor and we had confidence in the accountability and how intermediary organizations deployed it. We had over 80 small business emergency loans and close to a dozen loan guarantees. We believe this bill has beautiful parallels. That is what this moment needs right now throughout Minnesota. And we believe that our region especially needs this capital because of the folks that are choosing Southwest Minnesota as where they want to live in addition to multi-generational businesses. Thank you for hearing us. We are hopeful that action is swift and aggressive and that we can do what we need to do for these amazing entrepreneurs.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Mr. Marquardt. We'll ask Carl Swanson to make your way up. And remaining testifiers have 2 minutes apiece. And please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Co-Chair Baker and Co-Chair Pinto, members of the committee. My name is Carl Swanson. I'm the coalition strategist for the Minnesota CDFI Coalition, speaking today in support of House File 4477. CDFI stands for Community Development Financial Institution. This is a federal certification through the U.S. Department of the Treasury with rigorous certification and reporting requirements. There are over 35 CDFIs and CDFIs in process in Minnesota, and these are economic first responders and trusted partners. We provide small business support and capital, affordable housing developments, and capital across the whole state. In 2025, Minnesota CDFIs had almost $700 million invested in 2,400 loans all across the state. That $700 million is split between small business capital and affordable housing development. Shocks to our small business, agriculture, and construction sectors are a direct threat to that capital through delayed payments and defaults. The economic impact estimates from the past quarter are sobering. You've heard these numbers. Research from the Minnesota CDFI Coalition in partnership with Greater MSP mapped 14 corridors in the Twin Cities Metro with the highest impact and estimated losses of $213 million in revenue over a 10-week period from December 25 to February 2026. These are real impacts that have ongoing effects on incomes, employment, and labor force participation. And it's important to note that while we have much more quantitative impact estimates from the Twin Cities metro area, we know that there has been Main Street and small business disruption all across the state. In Willmar and Worthington, Forest Lake and Fergus Falls, St. Cloud, Red Wing, Rochester, St. Peter, Brainerd, and more, all communities where CDFIs have partnerships and support small business. CDFIs have stepped up to provide our clients with flexibility in loan terms, restructuring debt, and extending project timelines, doing all that we can to mitigate harms and losses. Mutual aid has stepped up, big business and philanthropy have stepped up, and now the state needs to step up and help make businesses whole. These actions and the work that we have done reveal the trust that we have in CDFIs and our partners in doing this work, and recovery, stability, and vitality will take investments. We want to thank Chair Zhang and Chair Frazier for their work on this and speak in support of House File 4477.
Thank you so much. Thanks for being here, for your testimony. The next testifier is on Zoom, and before we turn to her, John Segaldo Maldonado, if you can make your way to the chair up front, and then Stephanie Lopez, please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony. Hopefully we have you. Ms. Lopez, do we have you?
Yes. Hi. Oh. Hello. Good morning.
Hello.
Chair Baker. Hi. Chair Baker, Chair Pinto, and proud members of the community. My name is Stephanie Lopez. Not only am I a proud U.S. citizen, but I am also a first-generation Latina. And I have lived in Minnesota, to which I call home, for over 22 years. My family owns Spurs Grill and Bar in Willmar, Minnesota, a business built on profound personal sacrifice and a deep commitment to our heritage and our community. Our journey to open Spurs was a significant undertaking. After 3 years of tireless effort, securing three separate loans and reinvesting every single dollar that we earned, we finally opened our doors in 2018. We completely renovated the historic 313 building, performing a complete overhaul of anything from insulation, electrical, plumbing, from the ground up. And in 2021, we were able to permanently purchase this location. Spurs is more than just a restaurant. It serves as a vital community anchor, hosting classes, informational sessions, meetings, and crucial cultural celebrations. Wilmer is a very diverse town, so including like Cinco de Mayo, Heritage Months, Christmas parties, Thanksgiving events, weddings, quinceañeras, and so much more. However, the vitality of our community hub was nearly extinguished by the profound impact of federal enforcement. We experienced a devastating loss, about 50% or more of our revenue, when agents were present in our community. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
No problem.
And a significant number of our customers stopped showing up, while daily bills, loan payments, electricity, heat demanded payment. The fear of risk became so overwhelming. The situation escalated to the point where we closed for over 2 months because of the risk of detention became extremely high, even for me being a U.S. citizen. And what the reason being is because I have two children, one who is severely autistic. The thought that I could be targeted and detained while completely complying was while working is absolutely terrifying. And if that was to happen, my family's stability would absolutely collapse. The mere risk of being profiled outweighed for the need for our doors to remain open. Nevertheless, the spirit of Spurs is resilient, and the community has been our strength. We stand in our commitment to continue serving Wilmer as an anchor business, serving amazing food and providing excellent customer service. We urge you to please help small businesses that carry this immense weight for their community, and please vote yes for House File 4477.
Thank you so much for being here, Ms. Lopez, and for your work with Spurs. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Mr. Maldonado, please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Chair Baker, Chair Pinto, and members of the committee. My name is John Salgado Maldonado. I live in Wilmer. I'm originally from Chile, and I've been in Minnesota since 2017. I'm an occupational therapist involved in several community groups and co-founder of Purpose Artisans. It's a nonprofit where we use art and music to bring people together. What I've seen in Wilmer over the past months is fear. People are afraid to leave their homes, go to work, or participate in the community. Even for someone like me, who is here legally, that fear is real. And when fear takes hold, everything stops. Wilmer is small, rural, and diverse. Many small businesses are owned by Latino and Somali families. When federal agents arrived, businesses closed or reduced hours, and customers stopped coming. There was a real pause in commerce. And small businesses cannot survive that. Missing even a few days can put them behind for the entire month. I also saw the effects on the community. Neighbors showed up for each other, trying to protect one another. That strength, I can tell, is real. But in that same moment, when people needed support the most, many felt like they were on their own. There was a real distance from elected leaders, especially here in rural communities. I was born during a dictatorship in Chile. I know what happens when fear divides a community and people stop trusting each other. That was my biggest fear for Wilmer. Today we are trying to rebuild, but we need support. Small businesses and community organizations need relief to recover and stand back up. And rural communities like ours need real access to civic participation so people feel safe being part of their community again. We're doing our part. We need you to meet us there. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for being here. So the next is Crystal Torres Assure. I hope I'm saying your last name correctly. And Maisie Herr and other folks, if you can make your way to the front of the room so you're ready to go. And as you get settled in, please identify yourself and welcome.
Good morning, Chairman Pinto and the members of the community. My name is Crystal Torres Scheuer. I'm a lifelong Minnesota resident from Nicollet, Minnesota, and I own a small business in North Mankato. I'm also a mental health practitioner and work for our local community crisis center. My family and I began preparing to open our grocery store nearly a year ago. We began paying rent and utilities last March. Invested in inventory in the fall and plan to open in January. But immigration enforcement increased in our area and everything changed. Because we serve a Latino community, we couldn't risk opening. Vendors stopped delivering and they were afraid, as long with everybody else in the community, to deliver groceries, and we were afraid of purchasing in fear that our produce and other groceries would go to waste because people were scared to leave their homes. So we delayed our opening for months. During that time, we were still paying rent, utilities, loan interest with no income. We have also exhausted our personal savings just to stay afloat. Even now, after opening just 2 weeks ago, the fear hasn't gone away. People still ask if it is safe to come in. We canceled our grand opening and continue to keep a low profile to avoid becoming a target. They didn't just affect minorities. Our store serves the whole community in our area. There are very few places to buy everyday essentials, and people have told us how much we are needed. But we couldn't fully show up for them because our community didn't feel safe. I was born in New Ulm, Minnesota, the only home I've ever known, and during this time I felt like an outsider in my own community. My children were also questioned in school as they are the only minorities in the entire school. So I'm asking, what are we going to do to make sure people feel safe enough to live their daily, not only live their daily lives, but feel welcomed so that they are able to continue to support local businesses regardless of status? And what support will be available for small businesses like mine and unfortunately many others that were set back before we even had a chance to open? We are doing everything we can to serve our community. We're just asking for the ability to do so safely and to recover from what we've lost. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks for being here. Macy Herr is up next. Esther Obagawa, if you can make your way to the front as well. And future testifiers as well, keep an eye on the list. Maisie Herr, if you can identify yourself and proceed with your testimony. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Maisie Herr. Sorry.
That's okay.
And I am the owner of San Juan Restaurant and Banquet in St. Paul, Minnesota. This business is not just a place to eat. It is my life. It is my family's future. It is years of sacrifice, long nights, and hard work. It is a place where our community feels at home. We have always done everything right. We have been a good tenant. We pay our rent. We follow the rules. We show up every single day and work hard to keep our doors open. But during December and January, everything changed because of ICE activity in our community. Fear took over. Our customers stopped coming. Family were too afraid to go out. Our dining room, once full of laughter and life, became quiet. Imagine working your whole life and build something and then watch it slowly empty out, not because you fell, but because people are scared. And while we were struggling, while we were trying to survive, we were just expected to pay in full, not understanding, no compassion, just pressure from the landlord. We are not asking special treatment. We are asking humanity. Small business owners like me are being impacted by things completely out of control. And when that happens, we should not be left alone to carry all the weight. If this bill can be passed, it would mean hope. It would mean that people like me don't lose everything we worked so hard to build. I am standing here not just for myself, but for many small business owners who are hurting in silence. Please see us. Please hear us. And please stand with us, everyone. And I thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank
sorry,
you.
I cried.
No, thank you so much for your...
So sorry.
No.
I just have to cry because I just feel like I'm about to lose my business.
Yes, thank you for your powerful testimony and for all that you contribute to our community. Thank you. Thank you. Ms. Esther Obagwa is, I believe, up next, and then we'll have Juan Lopez after that. So as you get settled in, please identify yourself and welcome to you.
Thank you, Chair Pinto and Chair Baker and the members of the committee. My name is Esther Obagwa. I'm a Minnesota resident for the last 16 years.
Pull the microphone a little closer to your mouth.
I'm out of three children who both serve in the military, one in the Army and two in the Navy. I started my business. I'm an owner of EMCO Group Health Staffing Agency here in Minnesota. I started my business during COVID to create flexibility, opportunity for healthcare workers who we know that we need in Minnesota, especially now, who are struggling to support their families while also helping facility care for their most vulnerable residents. For many, this is more than just a job. It is stability, dignity, and a chance for a better future. But over the past few months, everything changed. The economic impact of the federal presence in Minnesota hurt my business in ways I never imagined. Many of my employees became afraid to leave their homes or even go to work. Some stopped picking hours because they were afraid of even putting their kids in daycare. They didn't have daycare for their kids because their babysitters could not show up. We went from steady operation to sharp decline. Our hours dropped drastically and our revenue turned to negative. I've had to make very difficult decisions just to keep the business alive while knowing the people who depend on me are also struggling. This is not just about my business. It's about families losing income, workers losing confidence, and community losing critical support. I'm here today to ask for your support to help small businesses like mine recover, rebuild, and continue serving our community. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony and for your work in the community. Grateful to you. Juan Lopez is up next, and then after that would be Jefferson Delgado. And once you get settled in, if you can identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Co-Chair Pinto. Thank you, Co-Chair Baker and members of the committee. My name is Juan Lopez, and I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak today. I'm here on behalf of a coalition of 18 small businesses across Minnesota, both in the metro area and greater Minnesota, who have come together because of the challenges we faced over the past year. Between July of 2025 and February 2026, and especially during the last months of December through February, our business experienced a sudden and severe disruption. Across our group, we saw significant drops in sales, loss of employees due to fear and uncertainty, and fewer customers walking through our doors. This was not due to poor business decision. It was imminent, external, and impacted the entire community all at once. In our own businesses, we saw firsthand how quickly things changed. Weeks were, our dining rooms went from full to nearly empty. Not because demand disappeared, but because the people were afraid. As outlined in our letter, many of our businesses had to reduce hours, lay off staff, take on debt, and delay growth just to survive. This is why House Filing 4477 is so important. The grants and forgivable loans proposed would help stabilize businesses by covering essential costs like rent, payroll, utilities, and inventory. Costs did not stop even when our customers did. However, we want to raise one concern on behalf of our group. The current requirement of 20% revenue loss may leave out many businesses that were still significantly impacted. Some experienced slightly lower losses, but still had to cut hours, take on debt, and operate under extreme strain. Others are new businesses that do not neatly fit into the comparison periods. Revenue alone does not fully capture the impact that many of our businesses experienced. We're not asking for a handout. We're asking for a fair chance for our businesses to recover from something we did not cause. We respectfully ask that you support this bill and ensure that it works for a full range of businesses that were impacted. Thank you for your time and for the support of small businesses.
Thank you. Thank you for being here. Thanks for your testimony. Jefferson Delgado, come on up, and I believe there's a translator with Mr. Delgado as well. So make some space, and then please identify yourself. I was told, at least I think there was a translator. Please proceed.
Hi, my name is Pauline Delgado Novak. I'm with my husband, Jefferson Delgado,
okay.
And I'm speaking on behalf of our family business.
Okay.
A small grocery store called Sabores Fresh Market in St. Paul. I would like to share with you our experience as small business owners who strive to serve our beautiful community. A project that my husband and brother-in-law started more than 3 years ago and that materialized with the opening of our business in late August 2025. Unfortunately, the start of operations was severely affected by Metro Surge operation in Minnesota. The situation has generated a persecution towards our community and main consumers, resulting in a reduction of our sales of 70%. During this period, we have faced a hostile work environment. ICE agents used our parking lot, intimidating our staff, customers, and neighbors. To protect everyone's integrity, we were forced to operate behind closed doors, reduce hours, and suspend orders from suppliers, which resulted in significant losses of merchandise. We even experienced a critical incident when ICE agents entered the establishment without a court order to arrest a member of our team, who was later released for having no legal issues. This event was captured on video and circulated on social media, deeply affecting the trust of our customers. As investors, we are at a critical moment, and we are doing everything we can to keep this project afloat. We thank you in advance for your support and the opportunity to be heard.
Thank you so much. Thanks for your work and for being here. Appreciate it. Israel Moreno is up next, and that'll be Tao Mejong after that. And Mejong and Katie Messerly, you can make your way to the front of the room so you're ready to go, please. And once you get settled in, please identify yourself to proceed.
Good morning. My name is Jesus Moreno. Good morning, Chair Pinto and member of the committee. Sorry, but my name is Israel Moreno. I own Melton Burgers at Eden Prairie Center. And I'm also here on behalf of two other businesses, Cielito Lindo and Mario's Pizza. My business has been around for 7 years, and I took over last July. As a business owner, this past month has been very difficult. We were hit from two sides at the same time, economic and social. On the economic side, our costs kept going up. Food supplies, everything, vendors kept raising prices, but our sales dropped. For us, it was about a 40 to 60% decrease. On the community side, our customers stopped coming. Latino families, people of colors disappeared from the mall. People were afraid. We talked to other business, and it was the same for everyone. This wasn't the weather. It was fair. When federal agents were in the area, they were outside a store like Target, nearby restaurants. Even if they were inside the mall, people knew they were there. Customers would come in, see what's happening, panic, and leave. Some of our workers were too afraid to come to work. There were days that we have to run the business alone. Sometimes we have to close. And I will be honest, it was uncomfortable. The same officers affecting our community will come into the mall to eat. I didn't know how to feel, but I kept treating them with respect. What I want you to understand is this affects all of us. Small business, workers, and families. sports is discussed, I'm asking to be included. Business like mine were impacted too. And I want you to say this. I saw community members out early in the mornings, standing on corners, watching for others. That was one of the most patriotic things I ever witnessed. Mm-hmm. We don't want this to happen again. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you for being here. I'm Taomei Zhang, who's up next, and then Katie Messerly. Please identify yourself once you get settled in and proceed with your 2 minutes.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, and committee members. Chair Pinto, Chair Baker, I've been before you in the past, and I'm so grateful for your support and your bipartisanship in support of the Coalition of Asian American Leaders and other committee members. And I'm also proud to say I'm a new constituent of Representative Wayne Johnson. I just moved to your district on January 1st. So, hello. First time to meet you. And a few other folks know me as well. I just really want to applaud the previous testifiers' testimony. It's very hard to be in the legislature this year. It's been hard to listen to the conversations in the committee, and it's been hard to share our experiences. I don't think people want to be here to share the hard things that happened to them. Mm-hmm. I think we're here because we need to. So the Coalition of Asian American Leaders is an intermediary organization, and we do a lot of other things too, but thanks to private funders and the state legislature, we've been able to grant out funding to small businesses, entrepreneurs, and nonprofits. And this is through bipartisan support. And so during the last 3 months, we've been able to help a couple hundred small businesses and entrepreneurs because they weren't able to pay their rent and they weren't able to go to their businesses. They had to close them down. Also, a lot of our employees wanted to stay home because the neighborhood that we're in, which is in Frogtown, we had a lot of folks being canvassed there, and they didn't feel safe. Even though everyone that works in our office and the folks that are our small business owners are legal residents and citizens. But because they knew that they were being targeted regardless of their citizenship status or legal status, they were afraid. They preferred to stay home. And I was really happy to move to West Lakeland Township because I had space to be outside with my kids, but I also felt really safe to be there. And so for those who lived in neighborhoods that I'm at my two-minute mark. I'll wrap up with this.
Pass that, yeah.
I'll wrap up with this, that we went to some small businesses, and we went to Hmongtown down the street on Marion, and they told us that whenever they saw white folks come by, they would shout out, ICE, ICE, and everyone would scramble and hide. Even though they were there legally and even though they had all the documentation they needed. But this was the level of fear that people lived in. And so this funding would really help small businesses and entrepreneurs. And you know, like entrepreneurs, their business is their baby. And they would sacrifice anything for their business. So thank you for support. Thank you for your consideration. And I look forward to meeting you in person, Representative Johnson.
Good. Ms. Zhang, thank you so much. Thanks for your testimony and for all of your work in the community. Katie Messerly is up.
Sorry.
Please identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning, Co-Chair Baker and Co-Chair Pinto and members of the committee. My name is Katie Messerly, and I am here today as a representative from Women Venture. And we want to voice our support for HF 4477. Women Venture is a CDFI that provides training, lending, and business consulting services to small businesses across the state of Minnesota. My specific role at Women Venture is director of child care programs. And I would like to begin my testimony with a word of gratitude for this community, for your ongoing support for the child care programs at Women Venture. It has truly been a highlight and a privilege of my professional career to serve child care clients across the great state of Minnesota. Thank you. I'm looking at retirement soon. That's where this is all coming from.
Thank you.
And a recent example of that work comes from two nights ago. My colleague, Hawa, and I had the opportunity to lead a business marketing and branding training workshop for 14 providers in Candiohi County. The goal of the evening was to show providers how to use free software and create affordable professional marketing materials for their business. Why is this important? Free is always good for the bottom line. And because professional, authentic marketing collateral is good, it helps businesses. Over the last year, the Child Care Department of Women Venture has opened 14 new businesses, logged 2,540 business consulting hours, conducted 20 trainings, processed 64 grants, and helped assist with the funding of $430,000 in child care business loans.
And I'll need you to wrap up pretty soon.
Okay.
Yeah, we're at the two-minute mark.
Sorry.
Yeah, that's okay.
We were making progress, but in recent months, that progress has slowed dramatically. No one called me in January, February, or March to talk about their dream of opening a childcare business. They called me with fear and worry.
And I will need you to wrap up, I'm afraid.
Women Venture supports HR 4477 so small businesses can rebound and rebuild. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Our next testifier is on Zoom, but as we turn to her, I'll ask Mike Hang to make your way to the testifier table, and then the other three final testifiers make your way to the front of the room. So Linda Sloan is up on Zoom, and please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Co-Chair Pinto, Co-Chair Baker, and committee members. First, thank you to bill authors Chair Frazier and Chair Zong for bringing House File 4477 forward. My name is Linda Sloan. I'm the Executive Director at the Council for Minnesotans of African Heritage, or CEMA. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today about the importance of economic relief legislation for businesses and communities impacted by federal enforcement activities. The impact of the enforcement surges have been devastating, without question, both in terms of business and financial losses, but also in terms of mental health and social trauma, which will last for generations. CEMA submitted a letter to the committee that details our support for economic relief measures based on the feedback that we received about business and community concerns and challenges. Two things that I want to highlight from the feedback. In our discussions with business and community leaders, they emphasize that grants are preferable, but the combination of relief grants and loans would be powerful and extremely beneficial to their recovery efforts. Second, constituents want to ensure that impacted businesses and communities are not unintentionally excluded from relief opportunities based on their geography, region, or types of business and enterprise, et cetera. Again, thank you for the opportunity to speak with you about this important and, shall I say, crucial matter. We urge you to move House File 4477 forward. Have a good day.
Thank you so much for your testimony and for your leadership and work for our state. I'm grateful to you. So our final four testifiers, Mike Hang, you're up first, so please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Good morning, and thank you to Co-Chair Pinto and Baker and members of the committee. And also thank you to Representative Frazier and Representative Zong for introducing this bill. My name is Mike Hing, and I serve as the chair for the Minnesota Hmong Chamber of Commerce. I am here today in strong support of HF 4477. Across Minnesota, particularly in the Twin Cities and culturally rooted commercial corridors, we are experiencing a real and measurable economic disruption impacting small businesses. This disruption is not theoretical. It is visible, immediate, and ongoing. Along with the issues at Hmong Town and Hmong Village, one of our community's cornerstone event venues, Unison Banquet Hall has lost over $80,000 in a single month due to the impact of Operation Metro Surge, resulting in widespread cancellations, reduced bookings, and declining customer confidence. These are not isolated incidents. They represent a broader pattern of economic disruption across multiple sectors. It is important to emphasize that this is not a failure of entrepreneurship. These are resilient, hardworking business owners who have built their businesses over years, over decades. What we are seeing is disruption driven by external forces, including workforce instability and reduced customer access and tied to increased enforcement activity. What businesses need right now is flexible support that allows them to stabilize operations, retain employees, and rebuild customer confidence. Many are already operating on thin margins, and without timely intervention, we are not looking at temporary slowdowns, but we're looking at permanent closures. Let me be clear. These businesses are not asking for a handout. They're asking for a hand up. When small businesses fail, the impact extends far beyond the storefront. Jobs are lost, commercial corridors decline, property values and local tax bases are affected. We are already seeing early signs of the cycle begin. By contrast, timely intervention stabilizes these corridors, preserves jobs, and protects Minnesota's broader economic infrastructure. The cost of inaction will also be far greater than the investment before you today. If we act now, we stabilize communities, protect jobs, preserve small businesses that define Minnesota's economy. If we do not, we risk losing them, and the recovery will cost far more.
And I do need you to wrap up, I'm afraid.
Chamber of Commerce, I respectfully urge your support for HF 4477. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you so much. Thanks for your work and your testimony. So we'll have the next testifier come up, and the next two be ready to go. Ayani Humas, I'm not sure if I'm saying your name correctly, but okay. So please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, thank you, Co-Chair Pinto and Baker, and special thanks in committee, and special thanks to Fraser and Zhang for the opportunity to testify. My name is Yanni Humas. I'm Executive Director for District Council 1 in St. Paul. I'm here today to report on an emergency in our communities, our Southeast Community Org, which is Southeast District of St. Paul. Our neighborhood is witnessing an unraveling of our business's fabric. This is not just about revenue loss. It's about the permanent disappearance of the culture and economic threads that hold our community together. In the past few months, we lost B.F. Yang Foods, a cornerstone of our district. I've met with some of who you heard from today, Shi Kuang Restaurant, Sabora's Fresh Market, Hatian Supermarket, Los Ocampo, which had to close for weeks, MJ Delights Cafe, Rainbow Clothing, operating with locked doors as well, Sunray Halal Market, Tea House, the list goes on. And this is all due to federal occupation. These entrepreneurs did not fail their community. External circumstances failed them. These once open signs turned closed. They do not come back. I'm hearing criticism as why their tax dollars are being used against them rather than support them. HF 4477 offers a path forward because it recognizes that the debt is not a lifeline for a drowning business. Direct grant-based support is. Many of these owners are still carrying pandemic-era debt. Additional loans would only deepen this crisis.
I will need you to wrap up.
In District 1, we've done that. We've created a resilience, community-led resilience fund to move resources quickly, but we lack the resources to meet the scale of need.
Thank you so much.
Please pass HF 4477.
Thank you for being with us, and thanks for your testimony. Andres Salinas, identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Co-chairs and members of the committee, my name is Andres Salinas. I am the lending program director at the Latino Economic Development Center. Across 668 grants applications, businesses request just over $8.21 million to sustain operations and preserve 3,290 jobs. The economic distress is widespread but also uneven. And striking 421 businesses
Nearly two-thirds reported revenue losses exceeding 50%. Together, they account over $5.58 million in requested support. This is not a marginal downturn. It is a severe contraction that threatens the survival of otherwise viable enterprises. We also see operational instability. While some businesses continue to operate, 207 reported being temporarily closed, accounting for over $1.85 million in need. Even among those still open, many are operating in reduced capacity, signaling fragility rather than recovering. Cash flow is perhaps the most urgent concern. Over 333 applicants reporting having no cash reserves whatsoever, often relying on personal finances to stay afloat. Another 213 reported no reserves beyond their regular business income. In total, the majority of applicants are one disruption away from closure. This crisis cuts across geography and industry, from Minneapolis to Greater Minnesota, from restaurants and retail to personal services. The impact is broad-based. Restaurants alone account for over 1,535 jobs represented in these applications. Personal services businesses, barbershops, and salons represent a larger share of the requests, reflecting how deeply this downturn affects everyday community life. This is not a partisan issue. These are small businesses owners trying to keep their doors open, employees trying to keep their jobs, and communities trying to hold together to help Minneapolis, Minnesota economy.
I will need you to wrap up, I'm afraid.
Data tells that timely targeted relief can stabilize thousands of jobs and prevent deeper economy damage. The question before us is not whether the need exists. It clearly does. The question is where we act. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thanks for your testimony and for your important work. And then Aaron Sepulveda is our final testifier. Once you settle in, please identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning, committee members. Good morning, Chair Pinto, Chair Baker. My name is Aaron Sepulveda. I'm Legislative and Policy Director with the Minnesota Council on Latino Affairs. The Minnesota Council on Latino Affairs is a state agency that advises and informs the state legislature and governor's office on issues relevant to our diverse Latino communities. We wish to add our opinions to those already provided by many of our community members here today in expressing support for House File 4477, with the addition of a couple data points that have yet to be brought up. So Latino small businesses are a vital and growing part of Minnesota's economy. Minnesota is home to at least 1,700 Latino-owned businesses, alone supporting approximately 17,000 jobs, which does not include the more than 10,000 self-employed Latino employees. In addition to some of the other data points provided earlier, between August and November of 2025, months before Operation Metro Surge, MCLA surveyed more than 250 Latino Minnesotans. At that time, the survey indicated that employment at about 38% of respondents and small business needs at about 28% respondents were already principal areas of concern in people's lives. When asked what folks could fix, 20% responded the climate for small businesses. We have heard the difficulties that Latino small businesses have experienced in accessing financial support needed to sustain their operations well before recent events and immigration actions. And of course, those actions have only intensified those needs. This bill is a strategic investment in the resilience of communities that have historically driven Minnesota's growth in all corners of the state, from the Twin Cities to Wilmer, across to Moorhead and to Worthington. We know now more than ever, we've heard it today, that there are concerns about spending taxpayer money in smart and responsible ways. As has been stated already, our small business leaders do not want handouts. They want to be able to contribute to the vibrancy of their communities in the same way they always have, through hard work, but they need help. MCLA urges the committee to move these bills forward. Thank you for your time and attention on this important matter.
Thank you so much for your testimony and for all of your work. With that, I'm closing testimony. We're moving to discussion and questions on the bill. Members, I don't know that we have anybody. Well, Representative Johnson was first up, I guess. Representative Johnson, Wayne Johnson.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. Thank you. I'm going to have a question right off the bat is trying to, because we've recently talked about the Promise Act, and we've had this come forward and funding for businesses and situations like that. Wouldn't the Promise Act be a good source for this instead of creating a new program?
Chair Frazier or Chair Zhang?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There will be continued discussions on this as we negotiate this bill. But also, I see the situation that led to what happened for businesses that needed to help from the Promise Act is different from what's happening here.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My concern is, thank you for that answer. My concern is also a concern that now the Promise Act is in the news. Promise Act is being investigated. How do you ensure a new program when we can't even get a handle on the old programs won't go down the road and be on TV and in front of us with investigations?
Chair Frazier.
Chair John.
Or Chair Sean.
Chair Pinto, thank you, Representative Johnson. If fraud is the concern here, then you should support this bill because this bill adds consequences, including referrals to the BCA. Doing nothing doesn't stop fraud. It just guarantees more businesses fail.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you. One more thing. Yeah. As a small business owner, this really come take to heart. But I think it also shows a bigger issue we have down here that I've talked over and over again. I know the small business owners are proud people. Mm. They believe they have the ability to succeed, and they're going to have the tools they have to be successful. Hire people, help the community, and do everything with it. Business 101, as a business owner for many, many years, was the importance of having cash. Cash is king. That you're told when you start up, and the biggest thing you need to do, because unfortunately, if you're a business owner, there are many things that happen outside of your control. And we saw what happened here. We can go back through history. What you need to do is have the cash on hand to handle 2 months, 3 months of downturn. It's happened to me. It's happened to many of my friends, many businesses. And the keys between succeeding and not succeeding is have that cash for that next day to open up. What is happening down here, and I see it in taxes, I see it in this committee, is a desire to make it that small businesses don't have that cash, don't have that ability to have that money for downturns. And that's the bigger discussion we have down here. Instead of constantly having the need for businesses to come seek help, we need to go back to policies and tax policies. An example, in taxes, we have now went again and made it very difficult for small businesses because the desire to go after taxing social media, which is one of the biggest sources for a small business to advertise. It's the easiest way. It's the way the small businesses compete with the bigger one. But they said, nope. We're going to now tax you. That takes money away. Now we're also talking that we want to put an extra tax on small businesses so you that have the pass-through, that so they can't keep cash because now they're paying into taxes. We have different mandates. We heard also in the Promise Act, we had people that one of the reasons there wasn't as many people applying for the Promise Act was they were so bogged down by mandates they couldn't find the time to do it. We have to go back and look at the big picture and make it so we have tax policy, mandate, standard, so we never have to have a business come down here because they can't handle 2 months of a downturn. That is where the state of Minnesota and the votes that are being taken down here are failing our small businesses. Let's get back to the issue and handle that issue, get rid of that problem, and then we won't have to have this kind of stuff. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Chair Frazier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Johnson, I appreciate that. It's a very good stump speech, but I don't believe it's appropriate for what we're having a conversation about today. We didn't hear one of these business owners come here and say that we're here because of mandates. They came here and they spoke to the reality that they've been facing for the last few months, for many of them longer than that. Since we've had a policy coming from the federal government to snatch people off the streets. That is what they're speaking to. That is what has caused the harm to their small business operations. That is what we can do something about and address here and help our neighbors out.
Okay. To Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's a lot of different ways to go with this. I share concerns about how this feels so similar to the Promise Act, and these fraud deterrent measures included in this bill are woefully unhelpful. There is nothing in here that is going to stop from fraud in this program. Further, it's dangerous for us to pass a bill that specifically cites that the reason that people would get assistance is from federal enforcement activity. Can you imagine that? Imagine that. Enforcement of federal law is the decision that you chose to write in here. You could have chose a more bipartisan path and chose dates over the impacts of policies. You chose partisanship. You chose that. So my question for you is, how would you feel if I brought a bill to provide business relief to a specific group of Minnesotans who are largely only people who look like me, have beliefs like me, and have been negatively impacted by the policies of Tim Walz, like massive car tab fee increases, earned sick and safe time, rising property taxes from unfunded mandates, and how would you support, your taxpayers and constituents paying for this relief?
Chair Frazier, looks like you may.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Schultz, those things you just listed apply to all Minnesotans. The last time I checked, they don't all look like you. Each one of those policies that you just listed apply to all Minnesotans. This bill would apply to all Minnesotans that have been impacted by what has happened.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And federal immigration law applies to all Americans. Mm-hmm. All Americans. There are 70,000 people, according to our state staff here, that have presented in front of this committee, who are people who are without legal status, working for Minnesota employers in violation of federal law. So I find it also ironic for us today, hearing from both the mayors of Minneapolis and St. Paul, that they come here presenting relief based upon the economic impacts in their cities that actually total a lesser amount of money than the money that was stolen from taxpayers in the Feeding Our Future scandal. Where is the relief for Minnesota taxpayers across the board from that scandal?
Chair Frazier.
Representative Schultz, I am not sure how you are equating the two here. With the pain you've heard, the emotion you've heard from the individuals that testified at this table, and you are equating it with fraud, with individuals that have been prosecuted, which have to pay restitution, but you're equating it with these hardworking small business owners that are facing closure of their businesses. I am not understanding this line of questioning here. I did not want to make this partisan. We did not want to make this partisan, but you clearly came here. You woke up today and decided to make it partisan.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Frazier, you wrote it into the bill. You wrote it into the bill. I didn't wake up this way this morning. You wrote it into the bill. In addition to that, the question before us, and the reason that I ask these questions, Representative Frazier, is because you are asking for a blank check by this bill right now for taxpayers across this entire state. The entire state. For frame of reference for you, and this is important, because there was noncompliance with federal immigration law because of cities like Minneapolis and St. Paul, and policies, sanctuary policies from Hennepin County and Ramsey County, additional attention had to be paid to Minnesota because of those sanctuary policies. Okay? And I just want to paint a picture for you. Communities across my district coordinated with federal immigration enforcement. Sheriffs had direct communication with ICE and DHS. Criminal illegal aliens were apprehended and detained without incident. People continued to work, produce, and grow Minnesota's economy. Within my district, I have not heard one negative consequence of immigration enforcement. In addition, Representative Frazier, in January of this year, our state took in over $500 million above our budget forecast in, guess what? Income taxes from people who are working. And this bill says that the people who are working and producing for Minnesota's economy should go to folks who weren't. That's my concern. It's outrageous when you aren't providing relief to people who are producing and going to work, while at the same time, the mayors of Minneapolis and St. Paul both said it was unsafe to go to work and to experience community in the Twin Cities. And for me, I spent specific, intentional time and money supporting our state's economy. I went to the Carmel Mall. I spent money on University Avenue in St. Paul. I went to downtown businesses and had a staycation in downtown Minneapolis. I went to each street. And yet now you're asking my taxpayers to pay for this. That is where my line of questioning is today.
Chair Frazier, yeah.
Chair, thank you. Yep. Representative Schultz, I'm trying very hard to listen to everything you're saying and not react in a partisan way. Because, again, I woke up this morning, I did not choose to come here and be partisan. I came here with we have a specific goal, Chair Jung and I and other members on this committee, including members on your side of the aisle, to help Minnesotans, to help small business owners, to make sure that their business don't disappear, to make sure that the economic, vitality that they provide for their communities doesn't go away. We're talking about jobs that would go away, businesses that would go away, tax bases that will go away. You seem really concerned about taxes. We're talking about tax dollars that will go away. By the way, tax dollars that we're going to help to support these businesses, they paid into this system. They paid into the system as well. So Wilmer's not in Hennepin County. Mankato's not in Ramsey County. Northfield, not in Hennepin County, not in Ramsey County. I struggle with your line of questioning because it doesn't fit and it's not appropriate for this conversation.
Representative Schultz, you have one final thing.
But
a couple of the folks.
My quick response is this. So to the taxpayers in Mille Lacs County who had complete and total compliance with federal law, why should they be paying for that when they were productive?
The same reason why taxpayers in Ramsey County, Hennepin County, pay to help your community. That is why. Tax base is right here in the metropolitan area. If you are that concerned, then let's write a bill, you and I right now, write a bill to rule out your county, your city, from receiving any state tax dollars from Ramsey County in the metro area. Let's do that, Representative Schultz. If you're that concerned, or is this about your political theater that you've been trying to do all year long? I've been working with Chair Baker trying to get something for business this year. You are so concerned about taxpayers suddenly. Give me a break.
Well, Representative Pete Johnson's up next. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for bringing this bill. We heard a lot about the fear that folks felt, and maybe you folks have never felt that fear before. But if you can't hear those stories and empathize with that, I feel sorry for you. And maybe that's why you want to downplay it and talk about other things. But the reality is these people came here and shared their stories about real fear that they feel in their communities and they felt. And they weren't, as you put it, illegal aliens. They are human beings in their communities. They're with legal status that were afraid to go out because they and their family members were getting snatched up. So off the fear piece just for a minute here. This committee, we hear a lot about hypotheticals and how things impact business and how this will do this. And if we do this, this will be the ripple effect. And to be honest, I didn't see anybody here from the Chamber of Commerce today. I'm very disappointed because the folks in this room right now are business that drives our economy. And the Chamber wasn't here to stand up for them. So I do have questions about that. Representative Schultz, you mentioned that not one single negative consequence for your district with Operation Metro Surge yet. And whether you or I want to admit it, those of us from greater Minnesota rely on the economic engine that is the 7-county metro. That seven counties generate more tax and revenue for the state than all the other counties combined, and we all benefit from that across every corner of this state. Whether we want to admit it or not, I would love to think that St. Louis County, we are golden. We don't need anybody's help. We are this shining star on the hill. But the reality is we need a successful Minneapolis. We need a successful St. Paul. We need a successful Wilmer to make all that work. And this idea that you're pigeonholing this group and saying that they don't deserve this help, and that's what this committee does, is it figures out how to drive economic development. These are businesses that are currently in these communities and providing services. Just a little bit of research. Metro residents pay $4,362, that's from 2023, per capita in taxes and receive $3,252 back. Non-Metro residents pay $2,871 and receive $3,423 back. Your community, Mille Lacs County, Benton County, benefit greatly from the work that these folks in this room do, whether you want to admit it or not. Thank you for bringing this bill.
Thank you. Representative Lesnikar, to you.
Thank you, Chair Pinto and Representative Frazier and Representative Zhang. My question is, I wanted to ask, I don't know if Mayor Fry is here still.
I don't believe he is, okay. Well, but I'm sure if there's questions.
Maybe somebody can answer this. But my question was, in listening, the mayor stated that we were already experiencing difficult fiscal times before Metro surge, was his statement. I just wanted to ask if he could define that, but he's not here. So I don't know if there's somebody here that can define what he meant by that for this committee.
I don't know if there's somebody who would feel comfortable interpreting that. Chair Frazier, to you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lesnikar, sorry. I don't want to speak out of turn or try to be a dog whisperer for the mayor or interpreter for the mayor, but I don't live in Minneapolis, but I live close to Minneapolis. And over the last few years, and my Minneapolis colleagues can speak to this well, we've had the civil unrest that came after the murder of George Floyd. We've had COVID, and I would imagine they're speaking to the myriad of things that have happened out of the control that they have not been able to, that they're still recovering from.
Representative Lesnikar.
Thank you, Chair Pinto, and thank you for that response. And my second question is short. I just wanted to, there's a part in the award criteria, I just wanted to understand it. It talks about how the preference is given. It talks about the direction is, number one, significant negative impact from Metro surge, and number two is the grant is necessary to continue their business. There's two criteria. And I guess my question is, how is that preference given? I looked at the data given by the Minneapolis Foundation, because as I understand it, Deed would award these grants to through the Minneapolis Foundation and through the St. Paul Minneapolis Foundation. And I understand those grants would be $5,000 to $25,000 for the employer. And it says that 83% were given currently, as it is now in that foundation, to the Metro, and 17% of the grants are to Greater Minnesota. So I'm just curious, is that same formula going to be used in this process, or is it going to be a different weighted program where number one has more priority than number two? I just wanted you to explain your thoughts on how this works.
Chair Frazier, Chair Zhang.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. Representative Zalesnikar, this is language that we're still working on. I think the original conversation that we had with Chair Baker was 80-20, but I also know that we have to figure out what our budget is going to look like. I'm also told we have someone here who can speak more to that language. Again, as I said earlier in my introduction, this is input from businesses and communities and stakeholders.
Okay, if you can please identify yourself again and then proceed and answer.
Hello, my name is Kenneth Abon. I'm a policy consultant with the Minneapolis Foundation. And then just to the point about the handout that was given to you, that was just a breakdown of the applications that were received, not how the breakdown of how money was given out. The Minneapolis Foundation, and I'm sure it's the same for the St. Paul Minnesota Foundation, would be happy to follow any guidance that the legislature states for how that money should be awarded between the West Metro, East Metro, and then the greater Minnesota as well. So we're happy to partner with you all as you all continue to think
Thank
about
you.
That.
Sounds like open to conversation then, Representative Lesnikar. Representative Lesnikar, anything else?
Thank you, Chair Pinto, and, sure. and thank you for
Actually,
that.
We have four members after you, yeah, so I want to ask
just,
folks
just to quick, keep... so, and I'm sorry, I didn't read this correctly. It's applicants, and I see that. So is there any data on how it's worked thus far as where the monies went for the percentage of the existing foundation money that you use for small businesses as far as metro and seven county area in the state?
And I'll ask you to answer real quickly if I can to the testifier.
Yes. Thank you, Chair Pinto and Representative. We are still in the process of making those award decisions right now, and awardees will be informed this week or next. So at this time, we don't have that full data set for you.
Thank you. I probably will need to move on. And again, four members, and we got to have a close, et cetera, in 10 minutes. So I want to keep things moving. Representative Greenman, you're up next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, both of you, for the hard work you have done on this work. And I just want to thank all of the people in the room who came and shared their story, and the hundreds and thousands, frankly, of folks, of small businesses, of workers who have been sharing their stories and talking under what is, I think, Representative Johnson spoke to the fear, and we heard here today. And I also want to appreciate the work I know that particularly Chair Zhang and Chair Baker have been doing in listening. You know, for many folks, this might be the first time you're hearing this, but for lots of members, and particularly for the authors and Chair Baker, I know that you've been in it for months really trying to listen and craft this. And so I feel like what I want to do is just correct the record a little bit, because I think it is important that Minnesotans understand what we're talking about. And I think it can get a little convoluted, especially hearing Representative Schultz talk about it. Representative Johnson, it's not a downturn. It is a self-inflicted wound by our federal government, who behaved lawlessly, violated the law and the Constitution, and is inflicting on this. There's a way we could have avoided this by not having that happen, not having the federal government do that. And, you know, Schultz, you said, like, I agree with you, like, imagine what we are talking about. Like, it is hard to imagine the idea that we're talking about is small businesses and workers being afraid of their own federal government, and being afraid that their own federal government will not follow the law and the Constitution, that they are black or brown and can't go out on the street, not because of their legal status, but because of the color of their skin, and that federal agents, federal law enforcement agents, will pick them up in violation of court orders and the Constitution. That's what we're talking about. And the thing is that while you may still be talking about it as an issue of compliance, the public and America, frankly, woke up in Minnesota and understood this is not about compliance with federal law. It was about submission to federal lawlessness. And what Minnesota said was, we will not do that. We will not. We take an oath, both here and our law enforcement and our state officials take an oath to the Constitution, too. And what we saw was, and I will not rehash this ground, but it does feel like when you keep talking about compliance with federal immigration law, we need to remind folks that this is about the First Amendment and observers and folks who had their constitutional rights violated. And that's not me saying that, that's courts. It's about the Second Amendment. It's about the Fourth Amendment. It's about the Fifth Amendment. We saw people picked up on the streets, and we saw on ICE, a confidential ICE memo that said that you don't have to follow the Fourth Amendment anymore. That's not what the court, that's not what I said. That's actually the words of the ICE itself. And there's a reason that they didn't release it publicly. Violations of the Fifth Amendment, violations of the Tenth Amendment. And because we are running out of time, I will not go into the specific examples, but you can find them in court orders littered across Minnesota and the country. And so when we talk about what we are talking about, it is important that we understand how we got here. Mm-hmm. And what we are trying to do here in Minnesota is protect our people and our communities, and in this case, our small businesses, who are the thriving engine of our economy. So I guess my simple question to Chair Zhang and Chair Frazier is, what happens if we don't do this? Like, what happens to our communities that have been so impacted by this federal lawlessness if we don't do some kind of relief?
Chair Frazier or Chair John?
Chair Frazier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Raymond, thank you for regrounding us in the reality as to why we're here having this conversation today. I appreciate that. I think I'll go back to, we heard testifiers say some of these signs that have been flipped to close are going to remain closed. More will be flipped to close and remain closed if we don't do anything. More communities will lose jobs. They will lose tax base. They will lose neighbors that will have to move because they can't afford to be there anymore. Every last one of us that represent people in the state should be concerned about that. And we definitely should be concerned because it is not something we asked for. We could not prevent it, but we do know what the cause is, and we know what the solution is, and we have election certificates, and we have the power to do something about it.
And as we turn to the next member, I'll note that that will then have a ripple effect on the rest of the state and every community around the state in terms of our tax base and our budget and everything else in every community. Chair John, you want something to add? Yeah.
Thank you, Chair Pinto and Representative Greenman. Empty storefronts don't pay property taxes. Closed businesses don't employ people. Because when small businesses close, the state loses tax revenue. Doing nothing is more expensive.
Right. Thank you. Representative Bakeberg, to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Chair Frazier, Chair Zhang, and Chair Baker for working together in a manner to try to support our small businesses across the state. Thank you. I would echo what Representative Greenman said in thanking the testifiers for coming mm-hmm. in and sharing their stories. So it's very difficult to come in and pour your heart out. One of our testifiers showed her emotion, so thank you for that. You know, we heard testifiers talk about that they need hope, that they need relief, they need support. And we all agree that we need to be supporting our small businesses. A couple very, very brief questions, and Representative Zelenskar addressed one of them. The grants, I'll ask my two questions, maybe you can answer them both. The grants are between $5,000 and $25,000 in relief to small businesses. Those are the range of grants, it looks like. So that's the first question. Then the second question is, can you talk about why specifically the Minneapolis Foundation and the St. Paul and Minnesota Foundations are named and not other business groups to support? So,
and I think that range of grants is correct. But, yeah, for the second question, Chair Zhang. Yeah.
Thank you, Chair Pinto, and thank you, Representative, for that question. The reason why we're going with the Minneapolis Foundation and St. Paul, Minnesota Foundation is the state has worked with them previously on the COVID response and the civil unrest response, and they have a record of doing great work in partnership with the state, and that's why we're going this route. And part of the conversations that Chair Baker, Chair Pinto, and I had with these foundations is that they have the capacity, they have the framework set to go, and they are actually doing that today. And so instead of recreating the wheel, we just felt that it was simply a structure that's already in place for us to work with.
And Representative Bakeberg, we need to keep moving, but anything real quick?
Very quick. And really my question, the chamber was brought up in, Representative Johnson brought it up, so that would be another group that have foundations as well to be able to work with. But I think at we're in the Labor and Workforce Committee, and we have to have an honest conversation about the business climate, the small business climate of Minnesota. And one of the testifiers actually said that the climate for small business, that there's concern about the climate for small business in Minnesota. And they didn't specifically name mandates. I'll give you that, Representative Frazier. But I have consistently heard from my constituents, whether it be in listening sessions, in town halls, specifically around this issue, or just coming out of session when we left the 23-24 session, when we left after last year, the consistent thing that I'm hearing from my constituents is that we need to have a improved business climate for Minnesota. We need to work together to address paid family medical leave. We need to address earned sick and safe time. We need to talk about the regulatory environment that we heard about. One of my constituents at the town hall that we had in Shakopee specifically about immigration enforcement talked about tax conformity, and he talked about paid family medical leave.
We do need
to... those burdens. Yep, I'm almost done. Okay. That those burdens are forcing him to leave Minnesota. So you're right, Chair Zhang. A closed business doesn't pay taxes. So if we're going to have this conversation, we need to have it be holistic.
Thank you, Representative Baker. Representative Kozlowski, we'll need to be pretty quick, but Representative Kozlowski.
Thank you, Chair Pinto, and to our champions for carrying this into our community. I just want to bring us back. There's been a lot of smoke screens and distractions, but that the reality is the federal government took in the largest transfer of wealth from the middle class to foot the $75 billion to fund these racist and unconstitutional attacks. And so I think that would be a great starting point, is to defund and abolish those and stop those crimes on Minnesotans. The last thing I did when I went to bed was I got a message from Northern St. Louis County in my community that ICE has yet again hit one of our Latina-owned businesses. And I woke up, little Liam Conejos Ramos, our little blue bunny, was a story about how there's long-term damage on this little kid who was so full of life and has been forever scarred. And the reality is that in Minnesota, our child care providers are saying that a third of them are at risk of closing, that 42% of our housing in a housing crisis permits are gone under, that in Minnesota, Explore Minnesota says 42% of statewide tourism has been in the decline. That's all of us. That's not just blue districts. That's not DFLers. That's your districts. Iron Range, Wilmer, Forest Lake, Red Wing, Northern St. Louis County. So I share the concern about making sure these funds get out to greater Minnesota and the Native Nations. And I thank you for working with those CDFIs who do that work. There's a lot to be said here, but that 20% in the eligibility is a massive blow to meet that eligibility mark. And I just want to give a note to Mr. Juan Lopez, who testified. I had the chance, as many of our Latina and Asian businesses and black businesses were hit so hard, yet we had small business owners like Juan stepping up and turning that into grocery delivery out to our communities. And when I talk to folks out there delivering, that most of those were going to kids and families because they had been taken. Kids and families snatched up. So let us not forget that. I was going to ask you a question about timing, but we can get that to
another time. Yeah, we got
dollars are going to be expended by October. So just nobody should go into default or have their business shuttered through no fault of their own because our government attacked them. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Chair Baker.
Real quickly, thanks, Mr. Chair, and thanks for bringing this forward again. I've always continued to work with you on these kind of issues. Why did the bill change from a forgivable loan when we started to a grant? What changed that language?
Chair Frazier.
I can speak. Chair Baker, the bill I carried did not have just forgivable loans. So when we did the merger, that was a decision to do that. But again, we expect to continue to have conversations about this so we can talk about that language.
It's complicated. Again, there is a lot has been said here. This is not a smoke screen. This is an environment we have to get right in Minnesota, because doing this every few years when some event happens, whether it's event weather-wise, whether it's government actions, whatever you want to call it, it's going to happen. But we can't keep doing this if we don't have an environment or a sandbox that we can play in that our businesses can actually thrive. And I've said this before on our committees. We have to do it right. These I've had business owners that have talked to me and cried to me about paid family medical leave and ESST. Before, when I brought it to committee, you guys didn't want to hear about it. That is the reality of what we have. It was a slow bleed. Now we have this event that happened a couple months ago that's real. I'm not trying to deny any of that. It's real. But we have to get smart about policy. And if you want to throw out $5,000 to $25,000 for a business to stay alive, we need to give them that kind of relief every year going forward forever. If they're going to survive these things, you brought more businesses to the cliff of almost failure just before the surge came. We have to figure this out ahead of time. Our members in Greater Minnesota and the NDCs, the Initiative Foundations, they all said to me outside of this room, we don't like paid family. This isn't what our small businesses want. So let's get serious about doing some relief, but this could be a moment in our time in our state to change the direction of how we can be business friendly and not friendly, because right now our unemployment rate should be an alarm to everybody right now, how we are now over the national average for the first time in 20 years. That blows my mind, and it's not just because of Metro Surge. It was coming. It's been clear there. So I appreciate your work on this. I'll continue to work with you on this. So will our team. If we can make Minnesota business friendly again, then we'll put the open sign on, but I'm happy to do that. And just real quickly, again, I'll do a review for tomorrow. Just we're going to have two bills up tomorrow, and then again, more discussions on the Promise Act tomorrow. So thank you for your work on this.
Thank you. And so authors are given about 30 seconds to close, I'm afraid. Chair Frazier.
I'll be quick. I woke up this morning, not to score political points here. Right. Our communities have been unified around this and helping out our neighbors. It's time for us to get serious and do the same.
Yeah, and businesses are no fault of their own. Thank you. I thank the testifiers as well. Thank you, chairs. And this is an ongoing conversation. And with that, the meeting is adjourned.